You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to another edition of the Week Den Update. I'm your host, Will Walker, and joining me 1,500 miles away, except I'm the one out of town, it's John Kraft. How's it going, John?
It's going. Unlike the national narrative, I actually do think we're fine in the West, but basically everything else about the Grizzlies, I don't know if we are fine.
So, I am in Los Angeles. I am going to the Clippers game tomorrow night. We're recording on Saturday morning. Last night, I was watching the Denver Nuggets against the Memphis Grizzlies, and we were planning on jumping on the pod this morning and talking about basketball. And very early in the morning, I don't know about you, John, but I got an Instagram live alert, and luckily it didn't wake me up. But I did check back in this morning at what that was because I saw it was Ja Morant, and it was not good. Since we have both been up, there hasn't been actual national reporting that has picked this up besides the blogs, but Ja Morant was on Instagram Live at a club last night, assuming it was in L.A., and there's a gun that he flashed on the screen very briefly. He appeared to be intoxicated with friends at a club. And the story around all of this is nearing a concerning place. And we are going to try and unpack all of this at the beginning of the pod. And I would note, we were joking before the podcast that the Week Den Update going into the season and throughout most of the season, the purpose of it has been to really unpack the Grizzly season on a game-by-game basis. And it's really interesting that the last 2 to 3 weeks we have been dealing with stories mostly off the court. We are both yearning to talk about these basketball games again, but some things just transcend that, and we're going to get to the game soon, but John, let's just start as an intro. What did you think after you saw that this morning, and where are you on the total Ja narrative for the last few weeks at this point?
Where to begin? I feel like, you know, it's interesting the timing of our podcast, and who knows, by the time people are listening to this, things might be very dated because there's other stuff that comes out in all sorts of different ways. But, I'm somebody who's probably will admit confirmation bias. Like, I am a fan. I tend to be someone who is very kind of loyal and defends, the teams and the players I cheer for. So I try to catch myself with that. And I'll say that I think going in before this morning, you know, we were going to talk about the Ja off court stuff because obviously there was a big article in the Washington Post this week that came out about a story that we talked about a long time ago that was concerning, but, you know, was in the past. And, and kind of, you know, for me, I am not like I was not like I'm concerned, you know, because it's worrisome, but it was not the kind of think piece, Leeds First Take, Leeds PTI type stuff that I thought it was. I feel like it was a lot of lawyers and leaking, and we can get into all that stuff. But this morning, kind of again, the problem is when something like this morning happens and an unwise sort of decision, it feels like, to make public what you probably should have kept private, then it begins to, like, there's just a lot of smoke. And so when there's a lot of smoke, you start to think there's fire. And looking back at the thing, at the Washington Post article, I could very much say, like, look, all the, this is very much a sourced from a family who is suing John Morant and his family. They are leaking salacious details. You know, they're, you know, it's one side of the story getting reported, and then the other side of the story being like, the police didn't do anything, didn't find any, you know, didn't corroborate any of the story, and John's family deny everything. And so, but you get a ton of paragraphs of stuff happening that's very, you know, whether it be laser pointers with the Pacers story, whether it be Jock coming out with a gun in his waistband. But, you know, and not to mention the fact you get like an actual Washington Post reporter just tweeting something that contradicts her own article that goes viral for an hour before her deleting it. And like I said, this is all the stuff I think we would have gotten into this morning, you know, and kind of saying like this stuff's bad, John needs to be wiser. But then when you put out on Instagram sort of the LA, your LA nightlife, which, you know, a lot of NBA players do, you know, not that I approve of all those things, but you don't make it, making it public is weird. And it's, and that's why, like, at the time of this recording, I don't know if we're about to get a hungover jaw waking up in a few hours saying that was a mistake, it was supposed to be private, didn't mean to make it public, what happened? I don't know. But it's very concerning because it goes back to, and that's why I said, is that there's just so many different layers to this, but it goes back to this week, a couple different podcasts mentioned the fact that the most surprising thing about the NBA this year is how the Grizzlies and Ja have gone from this lovable team, everybody's favorite second team, to a team that is hated, to a team that is... that people are constantly demeaning or dismissing, that seems to just be kind of like a whipping boy in a sense. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, it's a weird scent, that the change that the Grizzlies have made, in public perception. And this just continues that. And like to the point where now it's like I'm wondering if the Today Show, Good Morning America, you know, MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, they're going to start covering Ja in this Instagram post the next 24, 48 hours and it's become this big deal. You know, and that's the concern, because then just the narrative continues to flow.
Yeah, and to me, the first thing that I thought of after digesting the post, along with everything else that has gone on in the last month with Ja from a PR perspective, it just, I mean, the player himself reminds me of Allen Iverson, but now it's taking on an additional layer in that direction, where Iverson was this electric player on the court, but then he also has had this cultural piece off the court as well that he brought to the game. And obviously the big difference between Iverson and Ja is that they didn't have the same type of upbringing. And Ja, I mean, he's all about family. You look back at where he, you know, was training, small town, South Carolina, went to a small school, then was picked number two overall by a small market team, and has just absolutely exploded onto the scene. And it seems to be kind of, I mean, we do not know Ja Morant, and we don't know what his inner circle looks like right now on the surface. What's being reported and the things that have gone on, notably the Pacers thing, has just made it seem like he needs to make wiser choices in that area. But it does have this feeling of the hype, the just the notoriety. He's taking on an approach that seems to be, I'm getting bad press, but look at my success despite that bad press. And so I'm in a roundabout way going to lean into that. And you might not like the image, but I don't care what you think. This is me. This is, I can do what I want. And on the same day that basically the same weekend that a Washington Post article that alleges some new things comes out, I launched this giant campaign with Powerade. And a week ago, I was the athlete featured in Salt Lake City at the NBA All-Star Weekend. Like, I am invincible. And to me, this Instagram post is another brick on that, where he's pushing the envelope that I don't see the upside. And again, like, it's not this strategic thing. Like, if we had smartphones at that time, like, I feel like a lot of NBA players would run into the same issues that Ja's running into right now. And I think there's something weird going on in his subconscious and in his circle right now, where obviously he needs a better strategic direction, and he needs to be safer, because this isn't going to end well. Like, and has he done anything illegal? I don't know the gun laws. I don't know what is going on there. Like, he might not have that. He probably shouldn't have that in a club, and that probably is some legal issues. But overall, has he been convicted of anything yet? No. Is there reason for concern? Of course, because he continues to toe the line. And I think that's what most people are concerned about. John, how do you go about processing this in this specific phase of his career right now?
Yeah, I'm somebody who my day job is working with students, with high school and college students, most of my life. And so in some ways it's like I'm thinking about 22, 23 year olds, and one, there's a lot of people messaging me upset about Ja's behavior right now, which, I'm not, which I'm laughing, because I know how a lot of them and how a lot of my friends and my peers were when they were 22, 23. Of course, none of us, put it on Instagram Live, and none of us are worth $250, $300 million. And that's like the big issue, is that, he's somebody who is the superstardom. And, it's interesting he's thinking about it, because I do think, obviously I get very wary of comparing anybody to Jordan or Kobe or other people. But I do think that he has had that kind of rise in a way. As you look and people talk about it, if you look at the top stars in the league, he is probably the top, especially under 30, the top star that's American. That all the other really big players right now in the NBA are international. And he's really becoming that next superstar, at least. And again, I'm not talking, people get mad. I'm not talking about accomplishments. I'm just talking about marketing, endorsements, worth, all those sorts of things. And unlike LeBron, who I think has really handled, that's like one of the most admirable things about LeBron, is he handled fame. I think there's some very funny things about the way he goes about things and some drama stuff that make me roll my eyes. But he's not had any moments like this. But at the same time, LeBron, since he was like 15 or 16, was going to be the next thing. And so he had a lot of time to process this as a very young person. Ja was not recruited. Ja went from playing at a Murray State to what he is now. And it's crazy. Like, even someone like Steph Curry, who kind of similarly had more humble beginnings, like, he struggled in the league for a while. Like, he kind of was sort of, but Ja has come in the league and immediately took it by storm, immediately gone viral and immediately gotten famous. And I think we were asking on this podcast for the last year, when is he going to deal with that? And you could tell at the All-Star game, he multiple times in different interviews in the All-Star game talked about, like, you know, I just can't go to the mall anymore. I can't go to the movies. I can't, like, I can't just do regular people's stuff, and I miss that. And so maybe a lot of that is what this is about, too. I mean, I know for me, if I was 23 and all of a sudden worth all the money the Jaw is, and that I saw the mainstream media, the kind of, and just sort of the social media, just the infrastructure that is fame and media today, like, in my opinion, slandering me for a month or two, going after me, putting all these stories out that shaped me in the worst light. I mean, there's this sense where you just want to be like, you know, screw it, F it. I'm like, I'm going to do whatever. And that's what I'm wondering what this is. This morning, with putting that on Instagram Live, this kind of like, well, I'm just going to be myself, kind of what you were talking about. And the way Iverson was, but again, Iverson didn't have a smartphone. He didn't, you know, and so people didn't see a lot of the behavior. I mean, you can tell with somebody like a James Harden used to do some of this kind of stuff, and he quickly stopped as the with the endorsement stuff that was coming in. And you don't, you hear jokes, lots of jokes, but you don't see that stuff publicly anymore. And so all those things, you know, I mean, so to me, there's a part where I feel like there's going to be a massive overreaction by everybody to a video where he was doing some stuff I don't love, but that a lot of 23-year-old people do, a lot of 23-year-old NBA players especially do. And like you were saying, probably nothing illegal. But at the same time, you know, if you want middle America to be buying your shoes and, you know, to become, and for the Grizzlies to be kind of this lovable team, well, that's just not where, you know, that these things aren't going to help that. And I think just for him personally, it just, it's not just the lack of wisdom, but it's when you start to make decisions that seem erratic or impulsive, you start to worry what are the other shoes that are going to drop, I guess.
Yeah. And it's an old age old saying, but you know, sports as every coach, every middle school and high school coach has said, you know, sports don't build character, sports reveal character. And I feel that a lot of other things can be like that as well, notably money, notably fame. And I think at the same time, I don't believe that this is who Ja is based on all of the track record that we have with him in our lives for the last however many years. I know personally I've been following him since, you know, before the draft in 2018. And so the last 5 years, you know, this last month seems like a blip in that. And but at the same time, I personally would want to see some sort of, whether, I don't know if it's a statement, I don't know if it's a press conference, but something that suggests that this isn't, you know, Ja saying this isn't who I am, this was a mistake, and just leaving it, you know, at that and moving on. Because I'm just worried that it will turn into something as he's figuring out who he is right now with this new fame, with this new wealth. Mm-hmm. As, you know, a lot of people do have to go through that. You look at other stars in different industries, and when you get that famous, that young, that fast, it tends to not go well. But the difference is, how do you manage the mistakes along the way? And I am going to be interested how his team handles it without necessarily compromising who he is. Like Jenkins talks about Dylan Brooks, which we'll get into the Dylan story that came out on ESPN recently. You can't completely shut off the crazy and still get the same Dylan on the court. And the same thing with Ja, you don't want to completely cut him off from society. That's not going to go well. You have to allow space for him to be Ja, because that's what made him great in the first place, is how expressive, how fun he is. And yet, what are the proper boundaries and safeguards that I think it has to be a Ja decision? It can't be in anybody else, because at that stage, your circle, and he already had a tight circle, but I don't exactly know, you know, I'm pretty suspect of maybe some of the people in the circle right now, but it has to be a Ja decision on my career. There's too much at stake right now. Like, contracts, yeah, that's guaranteed in the NBA. But you look at a bunch of players who are at Ja's level. The generational wealth comes from the endorsements. And part of the endorsements has to do with, do these brands want to bet on you? And Ja has to become a guy that everybody can bet on. And he doesn't have to be perfect. I think we all want him to be perfect because it's just, I mean, I don't know. I want somebody that, like, kids can look up to and yeah, feel confident in that. But at the same time, you can't expect, you can't put all your eggs in that basket all the time. And but at the same, there is a proper expectation, and I just am nervous at this point for him, and I just hope that he makes that decision soon to change some things around, because this is obviously not headed in a direction that will end well for him.
No, definitely. I mean, I do think that, like, the NBA media gets a little carried away, but, like, you know, they're the ones who are going to decide whether they want to make him second or third all team, you know, all NBA this year, and make, you know, and so, like, they also determine a lot of money that he might make this year or not. Because I do think that some of them, the off court stuff is going to play, you know, which I don't, you know, I'm somebody who does not think that should, but they will, I think they maybe rightly will argue that some of this stuff has been a distraction to the team, and our play, you know, has not been as good the last 4 or 5 weeks as it was earlier when all this stuff wasn't happening. You know, but you're right though, in the sense that, like, you know, what makes Ja great on a basketball court, you know, and they talk about this, like, what makes Michael Jordan great on a basketball court makes him a very flawed human being when it comes to, like, wanting to be in a relationship with him, you know, wanting to be in his family. And I don't want that for Ja, because I think Ja loves his family. But I do think that there's a sense of him being the chip on the shoulder underdog, him sticking up for his teammates, which I think makes his team love him, is the same impulse that makes him go and talk to a, you know, go and intimidate a lowly mall security guard, an employee, because his mom says that, you know, he was mean to her. And, you know, and so there's, like, that aspect that we're like, why are you going to Wolf Chase and intimidating, you know, some minimum wage Finish Line employee? Yeah. Because that's just, it just seems mean. I mean, it seems like the elite person bullying someone, you know, but that's the guy who it's like, well, you went after my mom, and so now I'm going to go after you, that, like, makes him a beloved teammate. And so it's those are the things. But I will say, I mean, one of the reasons that we love Ja, one of the reasons we loved the Grizzlies last year, was the joy and fun they seem to be having. And I know that Ja is not playing with joy and not having fun like he was. Although, you know, I mean, after the Rockets game, it was kind of this, like, exciting thing to see Ja, you know, get into an interview again, be kind of goofy and fun. But it is, you know, it is something to keep watching. And obviously, you know, I mean, I just think the media cycle is going to be crazy on this for the next day or two. To the point to where I don't know, it feels like he's going to have to say something. Or somebody's going to force him to, because I feel like this is going to get out of control pretty quick. Because you already see it breaking over into the mainstream in the wrong way for him. And that's the thing. And it's what, you know, what you were talking about is what you don't want is you don't want kids, 10, 11-year-old kids coming and asking their parents, what's going on with Ja? You know, why are people talking about a video with him and a gun and strippers? You know, that is, like you were saying, not probably illegal, but it's not good for the brand.
Yeah, and I also think that if you just, I mean, take it from the human side, I mean, we've all been through stuff that you kind of have to hit a certain bottom to really figure out,
yeah,
I need to change. And I don't know when that's going to happen for Ja. My, like, hope is that it happens with something maybe like this, which is, like, I hope that this is the extent. That's my, because right, it's one step further than this is you're looking at some significant issues, and you're bringing in not only like it's less of the PR team's job and it's more of the legal team's job at that point, and that's where you don't want to get. And so I'm really hoping that this is finally the wake up call. And I know that I was going to say that about the Washington Post story before this Instagram. Like I was right. hoping that's the wake up call.
Yeah.
And I don't know when it's going to happen for him. No. I just hope that it's very soon. And if we're connecting it to the basketball, I don't think it helps that it was after a loss in Denver. Right. Like I think it's, let's be honest with ourselves. Like winning is the antidote for a lot of the, right. edge of the narrative. Like I think that the media is going to have an edge because it was after a loss. It's amidst a month when the Grizzlies have taken a step back and have started to play less like themselves early in the season and more like a team that's figuring themselves out again.
Right.
And I think that part of winning is going to be Ja playing freely and Ja playing with joy and everybody on the team kind of coming together and saying, listen, there's been a lot of noise this season. Let's shut ourselves in. We're about to enter the stretch run. We have to lock in. And so I'm also worried about the distraction, that how it relates to on the court. And I think that's something to watch. And I think notably we're recording right now at 10:30 AM, Saturday morning, and there could be something that comes out soon and a statement that gets put out. And so if there is, by the time you're listening to this, you know, we haven't necessarily seen it, but I'm like you said, I'm hoping there is.
Right. Like, I mean, that's so, you know, to kind of summarize, I think if you go online, the reaction to me is way overboard. I think you have to be concerned. I think you can't just I can't just put my head in the sand. And I think the thought that Jaw's very aware that there is a family, of a young man, 17, 18 year old man that he got into a physical altercation with this summer that has a lawsuit against them and is very obviously going to multiple publications and hiring detectives to find things like this Wolf Chase story that came out. You're not paying them off because you and your family are saying none of this stuff happened. And yet I'll tell you, that family's lawyers, they're going to a nice lunch today. They are celebrating at what just happened. And that's the kind of stuff which makes it just all the more confusing. So summarize, I don't like it's all these things together that are concerning and that, you know, and kind of what we were talking about, the two of us like podcasting, not to deal with this stuff. Like we just want to talk about the basketball and it's been a lot, it's been a rough 5-6 weeks of not really getting to talk about the basketball. And, so I'm just hoping that's, you know, and so because I think I don't want people to think I don't want it. We're like two people freaking out about, about sort of a more kind of like of Jaw's lifestyle or something like that. It's more concern for the decision making he has and it just continued to add up. So,
yeah. Final point on this, and then we'll move on. I think you have to be really naive to think that these NBA players are just after games, just going to go straight home, you know, get a long good night of sleep, going to come back the next morning ready to work out. And they're not robots. And the culture is not one that is, I would say a lot of people, if they really knew everything, would be like pumped about. Right. We tend to only react to what we see. And for better or for worse, like that unfortunately is going to be the standard that Ja is held to. And if it means having more strategic social media planning, and which he's good at for some of his stuff, but again, it can still be risky when he's ultimately the one that has it in his hand. But I think that there's a point where I think it's important to realize, like, this, there's going to be parts of, like, every one of your favorite players' lives that you probably would prefer would be that are different, because none of these guys are perfect. And so I am personally, my stance is I don't mind, like, do your thing, Ja. Like, this is you. We're not trying to, like, change you to your core. Just be smarter, because that's unfortunately how the game is played. And yeah, do I want him to, I think there's a lot of maturity that still has to happen. And I think it starts, square one is starting with how he connects online, and it work from there. And so, yeah, I just want to make that point as well.
Yeah. I think that very well said. So,
the other thing from last night that we'll get into that's unfortunate is the Brandon Clark injury. He was shooting a free throw, went to get the rebound after a miss, seemed to it was just one of those injuries that the non-contact are always worse, it seems, than the contact. And he tried to run on his left leg. It wasn't working. He went down to the floor and was holding, it looked like at first it was like a knee/hamstring, but further reports indicate that he was leaving the arena about halfway through the second half on a golf cart with his lower leg wrapped up in ice, which people have said could be the Achilles area. I know that he went to a Denver hospital to get further tests done after the game. Jenkins did not have any updates on it in his post-game press conference. We have not yet seen what it is. There is fear that it could be an Achilles, which would then put him out. I mean, you look at, historically speaking, in the last few seasons, you know, a year about to get back to full health. And if that is the case, that is a massive loss for the Grizzlies, not only for this season, but for potentially most of next season as well. So let's hope it's something minor that is can be treated and doesn't have to be this prognosis that we're all fearing. But that also just kind of put another exclamation point on how much of a bummer last night was.
No, I mean, you know, and this would have been the sort of the bummer news we would have led with. So, I mean, I'll say the one that gives me hope is that this tends, you know, I say old man's, but this tends to be a 28, 29, 30-year-old injury. Not for, I believe Clark's what, 26, 25, 26. So he would be pretty young to have this kind of injury, but, and so we are hopeful, but, you know, honestly, I mean, this is, you know, and I'm Mr. Optimism, but this really, really has me upset because I think if it is an Achilles, it is, you are looking at 10 to 12 months type recovery. But then you also have, almost everybody would say it takes 2 years to get back to what you were. But then also you would say that all the NBA players that have come back from an Achilles, like, I mean, I would say like Durant and Klay Thompson and some others are not people who rely on the athleticism that Brandon Clark does. That, like, obviously Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson are athletic, you know, but in the sense that they're shooters and they're kind of hoopers. And in that sense, it's like, you know, they're the lack, kind of a little bit of a lack of quickness or a lack of, you know, does not affect their games. So we, like, literally, Brandon Clark's ability to jump is his game. Like, that is so much of what makes him, you know, the kind of our best player off the bench. Like, you know, I mean, Tyus is important as a backup point guard, but I always think of our core with him as being that sixth guy with that look of him at four. And, you know, him and Jaren as a front court. And it's just really sad because, I mean, there's like a strong part of me last night that was thinking, like, we might have seen the last, like, that might have been the last time we see Brandon Clark in a Grizzlies jersey. And then, like, the whole rest of the second half, they were showing all these clips on commercials of Brandon Clark dunking it. And I was getting sad because, I mean, at this point, because of the way our window works and honestly, what our offense, because we were already struggling with athleticism this year because Zaire has not really worked like we thought. We got rid of De'Anthony Melton. We kind of – all our draft picks tended to be, other than Kenny Chandler, more skill players and than athletes. And, you know, I just don't know. And with what we're paying him, I mean, it just seems like it's going to be hard to keep him on a roster for the next couple of years without trading him. And then there's just the big fear of is he going to come back and be what he was? Because that is like so much of what he is being that lob threat, being able to protect the rim with his positioning and jumping ability. So, I mean, it's really upsetting. I mean, it made me think, as much as everybody's been trying to put Dylan in trades, it could be things like us giving up picks to get off of the Brandon contract coming up, or throwing him in a contract to make money work. So in that sense, it's really sad. And so I'm hoping that you are listening to this podcast being like, stop being sad, John. We found out it actually is a minor thing. It's only going to be like a month long injury. But it was it's really upsetting because I think it doesn't just, it's a bummer enough to make for this year, but it really affects next year. And honestly, it affects some team building stuff.
Oh yeah. Brandon Clark, if you watched the series last year with Minnesota, like he and Desmond Bane were two of the probably three or four guys that really won you that series. And going into this playoff run, when you sacrifice some current functional depth for future building and you draft a bunch of rookies, like you got to have the guys that you know you can rely on. So looking even less, a year from now, which is fair to do and we should, but looking just ahead to the next month and a half going into the playoffs, you're now down one more guy that you knew you could rely on. And the Zaire piece I was going to get to next, because he's been spending the last 3 weeks with the Hustle and a few minutes of garbage time in a game recently, but that's another guy that you could potentially be down, and I'm hoping that the Zaire piece, he has some sort of a bounce back. I'm a little worried there, but the Brandon Clark piece, let's just focus on this year. I mean, that really takes a hit, and luckily we have a guy like Xavier Tillman who's come in and actually played well, but those two guys do different things on the floor, so you're really not going to be, you don't have a direct backfill for Clark. And I mean, the cultural piece can't be understated either. Like he's very important to the morale of the group. He brings his style of play brings an energy that can provide life when starters are moving slow, when people aren't playing like themselves, and we're going to really miss it on the floor, I presume, for the rest of the season, and hopefully it's not beyond that. So
I think he gives us a huge different look on the as a lob threat, and we don't really have that now because Tillman coming in, and Tillman's been great filling in for Adams, but he's a similar style to Adams. Like we don't, like what makes us great is we throw that different look in with Clark. We can be more flexible, when different teams play against us in the playoffs, we can flex and then go more Clark Jaren, and all that stuff is lost. And like I said, I mean, we're now running out of players who can roll to the basket in a way that gives Ja space and Tyus space, honestly. I think a lot of last night's, and maybe we'll eventually get to actually talk about basketball, but, I think a lot of everybody's freak out about the fourth quarter. I mean, a lot of us, we didn't have Brandon, and it just messed everything up, and we were throwing in weird combinations and playing Dylan at the four and a bunch of stuff we hadn't practiced. But it stinks because, like, when people aren't worried about Ja throwing a pass over the top to somebody, it hurts our spacing, and he's just a huge, and that's what it's a huge bummer for all those things. And obviously I love Brandon. He's a great guy. I just hate it. and you know, coming back from this, if it's you know, if it's what we fear, it's going to be a really, really hard road to recovery, and all those things. And like, I'd love nothing more, like you said, for it to be minor. And if it's a major thing, you know, I'd love nothing more to be able to be excited when he does eventually come back. I just, like, as a realistic person, I'm just like, we're not in a place where we can pay somebody like pay a bench guy that much to for 2 months of rehab. So the whole thing is just really sad. And
or 2 years of rehab. Yep.
Yeah.
The Steven Adams is set to return. The coaches said that they expected it to be on this road trip. I would hope that it is the next game tomorrow night against the Clippers. Not only with the Brandon Clark injury, but just the overall team play. We need Steven Adams. It's more clear than ever. And this hopefully is something where the staff was being very conservative, because you and I both thought that it would be very soon after the All-Star game, maybe not the first game, but I thought maybe it would be the Nuggets game at home after All-Star ended. But we need Steven. And then finally, we alluded to it earlier, but there was a big ESPN profile written up on Dylan Brooks, and it was the least surprising article I've read this year about any Grizzlies player. Dylan, just going into when the reporter initially introduced himself, one of my favorite nuggets in is, you know, Dylan, one of the very first things he said was, "Well, you're about to get some stuff." So I'm sure that reporter was very excited. The Draymond quotes have been the lead, if you will, where Dylan's just very honest. He does not like Draymond. He does not like the Warriors. This is not news to any Grizzlies fans. I think that, of course, as somebody who is wary of the talk and how you need to back up the talk before you talk more, like, this was just more talk. I will say, kind of similar to some of the other news reports recently, like, this reporter was following Dylan around about like a month ago. So it's not like this is a recent thing. Like, Dylan, these quotes were stated a long time ago, so this is nothing new. I do think it continues to put a target on the back, but overall, I'm not telling it Grizzlies fans how to feel. I felt actually more encouraged after the profile than I did before the profile, just about Dylan, because there were some stats in there that he has guarded the most amount of minutes of All-Stars out of anybody in the entire league. And when you look at the list of All-Stars, it spans from 6'10 guys, 6'10 power forwards, to, you know, 6'2 point guards. And there's just not a lot of guys who can do that. And Dylan's there's a great anecdote about how he played when we were playing the Jazz. He went out to contest like the last 3 seconds of the game. Jordan Clarkson just had the ball passed to him in the corner and just took a three just at the very end of the game. But Dylan sprinted out to contest, and the ball clanked off the rim, and Dylan celebrated, even though the Grizzlies were up by like 10 or whatever at the end of the game. And it's because if Jordan Clarkson had made that three, it would have put him above his season average. And Dylan prides himself on holding guys to below their average. And of course, so Jordan Clarkson ended up with 20. His average is 21 throughout the season. And you just love having a guy like that. I have concerns over his offensive game. This is a good time to be talking about it, though, because he seemed to have potentially bounced back a little bit in both the Rockets and then the Nuggets game last night. He was actually making some shots and didn't take too many. But, you know, guys hate Dylan Brooks, and it's good to have a guy who's going to do the dirty work. It also was encouraging after – this is the last thing I'll say, and then I'll let you chime in, Kraft. But it was also encouraging after the game. Jamal Murray was the one who got interviewed on ESPN. And he and Dylan were chirping the entire game. They're both Canadians, you know, they have that, shared background there, but Jamal was just saying, you know, it was all fun. Like, it was all on the floor, just guys competing. So yeah, we have the Donovan Mitchell example, which is really frustrating because you're like, Dylan, this is just not helping the team win. But then you also have the edge against the top Western Conference team and Dylan guarding a player who plays point guard for them, by the way. And they're just enjoying competing. So that was a story that I felt like actually ended up adding more than it gave me concern about Dylan Brooks.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, obviously, I've always been more of the pro Dylan guy. I think, you know, he is the obvious spot to upgrade looking forward potentially, you know, if we're trying to find another like core piece. But at the same time, I do think there's a heartbeat to him. And I actually think, and I've been encouraged, you know, honestly, since the All-Star break. I mean, I think I was hearing like Harrington or somebody was saying, you know, he's actually shooting like 38% since the All-Star break. So I feel from three. So I feel, you know, good about him. I still think he's a really good player to have in a playoffs. I think he's essential to what we do. And I'm really looking forward to actually maybe, well, and it won't be Sunday, unfortunately, having our starting five back and seeing them all together. And so, because this is the negative about Dylan, is, you know, like he, and I get it. He complained about it and he said it was nothing last night and it shouldn't have deserved a double technical. And that could be true, but he also still got 15 technicals before that. And so, yeah. So part of the other news is that Dylan's going to be suspended for the Clippers game, the game where we play a team with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. He's going to be suspended for it. And now, you know, every third technical the rest of the way, he's going to be suspended. Fortunately, it starts over in the playoffs, but, you know, I'm, you know, I would hope that this is the only game he's going to be suspended for technicals, that he won't get three more with like the 20 games remaining. But that is, you know, I mean, that is, and that continues to be the one main, the only thing that I care about with Dylan, which is decision making. And those are the things. It's the him letting his emotions get the best of him in the wrong time. And if he's not a long-term Grizzly, I think that is the reason why, is because he makes decisions like getting a double technical at the end of a game that's already been decided, and then missing a game that we really need. So,
great quote after the game from Dylan. He said, "The only thing that I like about Draymond is that the NBA changed the rules in the playoffs because of him in regards to technicals." So that's just a classic Dylan nugget there. All right. Let me get a message here from our sponsors, and then we'll get into the actual basketball. From DraftKings, NBA fans, it's time to bring the hoops action to the palm of your hand with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet $5 and win $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, for a limited time, all new and existing customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Go to the DraftKings Sportsbook app today, opt in, place a same-game parlay on any NBA game. If it doesn't hit, you'll get a bonus bet back. Download the app now and sign up with code TBPN. New customers can bet $5 on the NBA and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA, with code TBPN. All right, the Grizzlies. We usually did do this at the top, but we had some important things to get to there. But the Grizzlies are 38-24. They're second in the Western Conference still. Only one game up on the Kings, but they're still one game up. They're fifth overall in the league. 113.5 is their offensive rating. That's good for 17th in the league. That's per NBA.com. Important nugget there. 109.4.
Cleaning glass, a little higher.
That's right. 109.4 is their defensive rating. That's second in the league. They are fourth in 4.0 net rating, which is fourth in the NBA. And then per cleaning the glass point differential, they are at a 5.4, which is good for third overall in the NBA. Okay, John, now having seen a few games back from the All-Star game, what's your general feeling about how the team is actually playing on the floor?
Okay, yeah, on the floor. So overall, I've been very encouraged by the way they played. I think we've seen glimpses of kind of our old selves. And by old selves, honestly, I mean not just earlier this year, but really the way when we peaked kind of last year, that we've seen glimpses of that, and that's been really exciting. And, you know, mainly just the really big thing is just playing like these quarters where teams just don't score. And that's been really exciting to see, because I think that stuff always translates no matter what. And that's, you know, for all the talk of regular season playoffs, like that is going to translate to the playoffs. So I think, so I've been very encouraged. I mean, we're, you know, second in defense and like pretty much all the, both, you know, all the different stats, both the normal NBA stats and the clean glass that takes that garbage time. I think, I think it shows. I think we're an elite defensive team. I've actually been excited to see, like, even like a Ja Morant, who often people thought of as a weakness in a traffic cone. Like some stats came out that he actually one-on-one has been a very good defender this year. I still think he gets lost. Like, you know, I mean, I just think he gets a little lazy sometimes on off-ball defense, but and gets beat backdoor and things like that, or gets hit with screens that he wasn't expecting. But he's actually been really good. I mean, to the point to where now it's like, oh, man, you know, like with our starter five, I mean, I don't know if there are defensive weaknesses in the same way. I do worry about Kennard. So that's been good. I think – so the big issue for me and the continued concern is – you know, obviously half-court offense gets hammered, our half-court offense being like 22nd, 23rd, you know, and I think obviously our actual NBA offense is 17th. Crazily enough, cleaning the glass, when it takes out garbage time, it's more, it hovers between 10 and 12. I actually think that is a better, a more accurate view, because I do think we've been so awful in our garbage time offensive lineups because of all our rookies. That I actually think we are more. I think we were more average to slightly above average offensively, and not below. You know, slightly below average offensively. I think that's more accurate. And so that is still a concern. I still look and think we run good stuff, but then we miss the shot that we get. We're not finishing well, especially last night against the Nuggets. We missed so many shots, even in the paint. But it is still a concern. It's, you know, I mean, we can run good stuff, but then we got to finish the play. But the biggest, you know, honestly, the biggest issue for me so far has been, it just feels like we struggle in the clutch. And that's obviously the biggest, looking to the playoffs, that has been my biggest concern, is we are, in fourth quarters, we are struggling. And I think there's a lot of different reasons for that. I think there's a lot of reasons that we can get into why I'm encouraged and not discouraged by like what the potential is there. But that is seemingly close games. Like we end up, you know, kind of not pulling them out. And then oftentimes games where we're ahead, they kind of come back in with lesser teams. They get kind of close to us in fourth quarter sometimes, or make more of games than they should. And so that's the thing that's hanging out there, that it's like, I want to see us. And we did it a couple times, but I like, you know, I want to see us finish close games, because that's something we've really struggled with. Well, especially on the road. And that's the biggest thing to me, is we've really struggled on the road in fourth quarters. That's been our big downfall. And that's really been that way all year. And that's been a little bit of a difference from last year. Again, I think there's a lot of just like normal, like I just think the road's harder this year. I think home crowds are back. We're post-COVID and all those sorts of things. I think our team's a little younger. And so our role players and bench players play worse on the road, like is traditionally the case. But that's the big, you know, red alert concern. People are talking about all sorts of other things. People are criticizing Jenkins, and we might be able to talk about that in a minute, how stupid I think that is. But that's the big thing for me, is fourth quarters.
Yeah, I totally agree. I had fourth quarters written down as my like number one takeaway from the last five games after All-Star break. I think you really saw it in the Philly game, where, you know, going into a pretty hostile environment, which Philadelphia always is, you're winning basically almost from the jump the whole time, and then you have Embiid and Harden basically win that game for the Sixers, along with the few turnovers down the stretch as well, and just some lack of shot making, lack of offense, and that is 100% a concern. But here's the deal. I think that we are going to be a brand new team when Steven Adams comes back, and this point has been belabored, but I looked back, he has missed 16 out of the 62 games that the Grizzlies have played thus far. That is 25%, and I feel like people have that narrative it came and went, and now this is sort of how we're evaluating the team. And here's what's frustrating to me. I get that Steven Adams shouldn't be this important to the Grizzlies' success. In an ideal world, he wouldn't be, but I've kind of taken a whole like 180 on this. Like, look at the Bucks. Do you think that they would have like the same level of concern And we would be evaluating the Bucks the same way if they were missing Brooke Lopez for 25% of their season and they had to rely on guys like Bobby Portis to fill in their center minutes for this stretch. Like, the part of the Bucks' success is having these X factors like Brooke Lopez who can come in and do a lot of these little things. And they're, Brooke Lopez and Steven Adams aren't the same player, but I think that they occupy a similar space where they're like probably the fourth or fifth most important piece of their team. And without them, you lose a core part of their identity and how they play the game. Like, I think it is okay that Steven Adams is this important to the Grizzlies. The front office knew that, and that's why they went and got a guy like Steven Adams. Like, why he's a member of the team. Like, what do you mean he shouldn't be this important, that we have him on the team? Like, I just don't get it. And
yeah, I don't get that. That's like, yeah, the statement that annoys me the most is, man, they're really relying on Adams, and that just says a lot about the Grizzlies.
Yeah, no, of course they are. That's why they went and got him. Like, he, every player who you have in this rotation is important. And yeah, does he have like potential red flags in the postseason? Yes, of course. Like, but there's more. Like, you have to get to a specific like part of the season where you are in a position to even be in the playoffs. Like, that's I don't know. I've gotten pretty upset about this in the last few games when I've seen it all over Twitter and everything, and I'm so ready to have him back, not because I think that he is going to solve all the issues. That is not, like, Steven Adams does not solve every issue, but what I do think he helps is in the half court, in the clutch. When you look at a game like the Cleveland game at home, which in my opinion still is probably the best win so far of the season, or the most exciting game of the season, you have a John, like, yes, Steven Adams had the putback that ended up being the game winner, but you look a couple plays before that, Steven Adams cleared out just 6 inches of space, which allowed a guy like John Morant, as skilled as he is, to get to the rim. And when you don't have Steven Adams, that space is not there for Ja to operate. And that is a core part of our offense. I think it still should be. If you have a guy like John Morant who can get to the rim at will, you need that extra 6 inches is essential for him. And you also look at all the rebounding. Like, I think the shooting numbers have completely been skewed by the fact that we don't have a guy like Steven Adams who can get in there and provide a few extra possessions and second chance points and putbacks and things like that. Like, his screening is, I mean, just follow Steven Adams' stats on Twitter and you'll be reminded about this every day. Great, great follow. But that's the core of this, is that we've missed Steven Adams for 25% of our games now, and we have not been whole. And we won't see it in the Clippers game because, like you said, Dylan will be suspended. But I am so ready to have more than 11 games of a sample size with our five starters. And I think that what he brings on the court and off it, frankly, is going to be much needed for this Grizzlies team down the stretch. And I can't wait to have him back.
Yeah, and not to mention just like what it does with Jaren, making Jaren this unbelievable weak side help defender. And, you know, and freeing him up from some physical stuff to be able to do more offensive. I mean, it's a huge deal. And, you know, I mean, to me, that's the same. I mean, I get annoyed when people are like, I mean, if, you know, we're a flawed team if we rely so heavily on Jaren for our defense. I'm like, well, no, that's why we have Jaren. Like, that's why it started the same way.
Right.
You know, like, that's, you know, like, it's the same way we rely on Ja to, like, run our offense. Like, it's just, that's the way, unfortunately, you know, for basketball. I mean, and I feel like people get this with football, that, the, you know, they see the how important the quarterback is. But in basketball, one of the differences is there's actually more, there's a lot of moving parts, and they're all really important. And when you take out one, it really throws some stuff. And I think that's what's happened. I think, and again, you know, our three-point shooting, those offensive rebound kickouts, that we just haven't been getting, we're going to get now, you know, and just, there's just a lot of stuff that obviously I think our offense is just way better. And so I look forward a lot to having him. And again, we've had our starting five for 11 games, for 11 games the whole year, we've gotten to see our starting five. And so I think, you know, I'm really excited about getting him back and everything he brings, for sure. And I'm hoping that'll, again, help our clutch stuff. And that actually brings me to another thing that I was frustrated with, like seeing last night. And I get it. It's frustrating being up early at Denver and to just get hit by this nugget tsunami at the beginning of the fourth quarter and towards the end when Jamal Murray just kind of goes off. And I get it. It's upsetting. But that's where part of me, I want to like back up. Okay, we blew this team out 6 days ago. So remember that. Secondly, it was very obvious coming out of the half. Everybody, competition's, you know, done. We're taking a break for a minute. Oh, crap, our best friend might be like, his career could be done with Brandon Clarke injury. And you could tell because one of the big things that happened was when we came out, Dylan totally just completely lost Murray, like just didn't close out, gave him a wide open three pretty early in the third quarter, which to me was very un-Dylan-like, but also like unfortunately got Jamal Murray going for the next few minutes. But then, so you had that. But then we gave up like three or four offensive rebounds that we hadn't been giving up in the first half. It just felt like we were out of it. And then they kind of made a little run and it kind of got closer. And then, you know, we got hammered in the fourth quarter minutes when we were resting Jaw, when we didn't have Brandon in his normal play. So Jaren was having to do some stuff. And then we took Jaw and Jaren out for a couple minutes, which is kind of like the big, like on Twitter, this was a big, like, from I think a lot of the smart Grizz Twitter people that I follow, they were just so upset about these 2 minutes. And then there's this entire, you know, I'll say it, terrible Twitter spaces afterwards about frustration with Jenkins, how he's a robot. Everyone was so upset about his quote that was, we played Jaren 31 minutes. That's what we were looking to do. We needed to sit him. And I get it. We want to win the game. Like, we want to beat the Nuggets. But at the end of the day, that game last night does not matter in the big scheme of things. It matters in the process because I love the regular season and I want to win all the games. But in the big scheme of things, playing – like when I look and I see that he had to play Jamal Murray 39 minutes last night and he played Jaren 31, he played Ja 33, and he played Jokic 36, and that's how he's playing them. Well, guess what? If we get to a Western Conference Finals with them, having to play even more minutes, like them playing 40 minutes, and we played 30 minutes all regular season, and now we're just now upping our minutes, we are going to have a huge advantage against an older team. And I just feel like people lose sight of, like there was one game we played Jaren and Jaw like 40 minutes, and that was that game coming off that huge losing streak. We needed the win, and Jenkins, as the coach who knows the team because he's not a robot, kept them in because he knew we have to win this game. Like, we just cannot lose this game. We can lose last night's game. Like, it's fine. We're still the 2 seed. I know the Kings are a little closer. But the rest of this season is about getting right, you know, with all the stuff that we talked about for the first like 45 minutes of this podcast, getting right and holding on to the 2 seed. Because it looks like we're in the right side of the bracket. In fact, I would argue we don't want to be the 1 seed, possibly, if you want to look at it. I mean, I think we'll feel that if we're in Game 7 with the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals. We'll be like, I wish we were the 1 seed. But I just think – I just want people to get perspective that like – it's a good thing that our organization is saying we don't want to play our guys 40 minutes in a regular season game – a game where we're not favored, a game where we're playing an awesome team at their place, that we're not going to kill our guys. By the way, Ja was playing with a face mask because he like broke his nose. So maybe resting him a little bit extra in the fourth quarter is maybe a smart idea. Like, I'd rather, you know, I don't want Ja having more injuries, you know. And so I guess it frustrates me because I think a lot of people – did that. And then a lot of people just talked about us being not a serious team and stuff like that. And I'm just like, what do y'all like? No, in fact, resting Jaren and Ja in the fourth quarter, it was annoying. And I wish that the rotations wouldn't have been better. But one, Brandon Clarke got injured. So we were really scrambling. And because we don't have Adams or Clarke now. But two, no, we are a serious playoff team. And that's why we're only playing Jaren 31 minutes. Sorry. That was like a rant that probably was unnecessary, but I got frustrated about it.
If you look also, Nuggets, before last night, 28-4 at home. Like, you have to go into this game expecting that a lot of things have to go exactly right for you to win this, because that's what it's taken to beat Denver at home. And like you said, a few nights earlier, we played this exact same team. Granted, you know, they were without Aaron Gordon, but like, sorry, we showed that we can also beat them with Aaron Gordon if you watch the first half of the game last night. And what's encouraging to me is that there is no team in the league that I feel, if you roll the ball out with these two teams, that the Grizzlies can't beat. And even Boston, like, we had a very competitive game without a lot of our guys against Boston at home that came down to the wire. And then when we played them on that Super Bowl Sunday, you know, they shot the lights out. Like, sure,
no,
maybe Boston is the one team where I really don't feel like we are going to be favored in a series or have a chance against them. And even then, I think we would push Boston to at least six, if not seven. And we won't have to worry about that until the NBA Finals, potentially. Yeah. So that's where I'm not concerned. I'm not freaking out, like you said, about rotations and minutes, because I trust that the organization has the playoffs in mind with just about every decision that they're making. And you cannot tell me that without Adams and without Clark, that they should have gone out and basically tried to play Jaren the entire second half for a game that they were, you know, there was an 88 or whatever percent chance that they weren't going to win, because there's Denver is that record at home. So it's not like you're going out, and you have two more games too that you are very winnable looking ahead in this road trip. So.
And part of it is, and we tend to, I mean, and I do, I mean, I think the fourth quarter is winning time. We just have talked about our fourth quarter struggles. But like, one of the things we did was they started cold, and we missed. Santi Aldama missed three wide open threes in the first half. We, like in the third quarter, when the Nuggets were bringing their energy, we went 1-for-2 from the free throw line, three straight possessions. So instead of scoring 6 points, we only scored 3 points. Like, there are things that we could do better. And honestly, we probably should have been up by more than 8 at halftime. And that was part of the problems, because they weren't hitting and we weren't up enough for how they were missing some shots. And so I just say that, like, you know, I mean, for us, the strategy, when it gets deep in the playoffs like this, yeah, like, I will be freaking out and coming on here and yelling at Jenkins if we had some of the weird, like, all bench lineups or no Jaw Jaren Bane lineups out there in the fourth quarter of a playoff game. Yeah. Like, I'll freak out if that's the case, but not in a regular season game against a really, really good opponent. It's just, it's very weird. And I feel like it speaks more to fans just kind of angst about, honestly, all the off court stuff we spent most of the podcast talking about.
Yeah. And another thing I'll say is, would you rather us go by the load management model, where you don't even have Jaren playing, period, in a game like this, because there are a bunch of other teams who are using that as their MO instead of, you know, continuing to play their guys in each game and, you know, preserving the rhythm of that? It probably reduces risk of injury in the long run, having very consistent schedules. I mean, we're about to play a team like the Clippers, who you look at their struggles recently, and, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the way that the ages are completely different. And so I don't think it's like I think it's sort of apples to oranges, but I would rather the Grizzlies have like a night to night minutes, quote unquote, restriction. It's not a complete restriction, as you mentioned earlier, in a game where we need to win, like Jenkins has shown, he's going to try to win. But that's another thing. I just think that we've taken I think fans would freak out less in a weird way if we didn't play our guys at all, rather than just play them a normal amount of minutes, which, again, looking ahead to the playoffs, we have to adjust. We have to adjust our expectations. And we have to adjust how we're looking at these night-to-night games, because if you ask, if you did a poll of 100 Grizzlies fans and you said, here's the situation, do you expect to win or do you expect to lose? Like, my guess would be like over probably 70% of people going into this game against Denver, knowing all of the data about their home record versus our away record, would expect to lose. And that's just something you have. That's part of the NBA regular season. There's 82 games. Like, you're just, you cannot isolate this and treat it as something that's like a larger problem, in my opinion, tonight. Like, there's other things that we can isolate and build up evidence. And I'm not saying Jenkins is a perfect coach either, but I totally agree. Like, the minutes did not bother me last night. I don't believe also that that's the reason we lost. No. Overall. So,
yeah.
All right. Should we get into the schedule ahead?
Sure.
We both had an off the record last 10 games prediction, or excuse me, next 10 games prediction of 6-4. Technically, that 10 games started with the Rockets. And so we are 1-1 so far in these 10 games. And so the rest of the way, we are basically predicting 5-3 to finish out this stretch. And I'll go ahead and read the next 8 games on that. Tomorrow night, playing against the Clippers in L.A. Tuesday night, playing the Lakers in L.A. Then we're home on March 9th against the Warriors. And we also are going to be playing the Mavericks in sort of like a back-to-back, except one's home on March 11th and one's away on the next Monday, March 13th. So that's 5 games. Then the last 3 in this set are at Miami, at San Antonio, and then home again against the Warriors. And so an interesting stretch here. Technically, strength of schedule for the Grizzlies was pretty low if you look at the entirety of the rest of the schedule, but it's front-loaded in terms of the teams that are going to be difficult, including the Nuggets game last night. But, I mean, Clippers, Warriors, Mavericks in particular, like, those teams right now are still, you know, they're oscillating depending on the night just because the West is so tight. But those are 3 teams that you need to watch out for moving forward and could very well be matchups for the Grizzlies, either in the first or the second round, depending on how the West shakes out. So what are you feeling about these next 8 games as we look ahead?
Yeah, I mean, as far as like for us in the seed, like, to me, if we can get out of these 8 games and be the 2 seeds still, or even be tied with the Kings, I think we're looking really good, because that next 10 game stretch is very light. It's definitely a get right 10 game stretch that we haven't had in a while. I'll rant, but like, looking at this is again why it's like, I would have been freaking out if we'd played Ja and Jaren 40 minutes last night, looking at this stretch, and like, we're playing every other day, very little rest. And so this is a big, you know, and I think I will say, fortunately, we get to play a lot of these teams at home, where we've been excellent. And so that's probably why you also went 6-4. Because I do feel like we're strong at home. I feel like, and also feel like a team like the Warriors, like, we owe them. We're going to go in with all the, you know, with all the momentum to beat them, I think. And obviously the Mavs too. So I think, so some good games. You know, I thought that this Clippers game, and we'll see, you know, I think if we're down Adams and Brooks and Brandon Clark, winning at Clippers is going to be a tough ask. Hopefully we're getting Adams back. But not having Dillon is definitely going to affect the Clippers game. I think I counted that as one of the 4 losses, but definitely we need to at least go 1-1 here in LA, I think, win either at Lakers or at Clippers. Love if we went 2-0. But you know, a tough stretch, a fun stretch, a lot of national TV games. You know, I think I'm excited to see it. I think this is kind of the good, like, hey, playoff intensity, you know, kind of get ready, and then we have some easier games coming up to kind of get right before the playoffs. And that's the hope. The hope is we're not having to stress the last 10 and 11 games to stay, you know, keep the 2 seed.
Yep, 100%. Right now, like you mentioned, Kings back 1 game. They seem to they're like the reverse Grizzlies, where they just will not, like, every single game that they play in is a close game, and they've just like had this clutch performance recently where they've just, I don't know.
Last night they were helped out by Russell Westbrook just like
letting the basket
through his hands.
Both of the most notable games were against the Clippers, who have recently added Russ, and so that has to be factored in as well. But the Suns from there, Grizzlies are still up four games on the Suns. And then from the four seed, which are the Suns, down to the 12 seed, you have a just 5.5 games, or excuse me, the 13 seed with the Trailblazers, you have 5.5 games separating all those teams. And as we get down to the home stretch, you know, that's not going to be as significant just because the lack of games left, but we could see major reshuffling night to night, and you're going to be wanting to refresh the standings after each performance every night. So it's going to be, I still think if I were to bet, like the Grizzlies have still above a 50% chance of keeping the two seed. Based on the Kings schedule is just, it's going to get a little bit tougher for them looking forward. And, you know, we still just need to take care of the low hanging fruit. And I'd love to finish out this road trip at 2-2 at the minimum. So, and the Lakers are going to be without LeBron as well. So that probably takes them out of it to a certain extent. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be really intriguing looking ahead, and we will have our finger on the pulse for you. And really quick, some breaking news live on the pod, which isn't actually breaking news, but Shams and Woj both having a statement from the NBA spokesman, Mike Bass, saying we are aware of a social media post involving Ja Morant and are investigating. So, yeah, that's all we have right now at the time of this recording. John, any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I think that's kind of it. I mean, I think there's just a lot of stuff going on with the Grizzlies right now, and I hope people aren't getting too, you know, carried away with their despair at things, and try to remember, like, we actually have been playing well. We did get beat last night by a good team, by an excellent team, honestly, and an excellent player. And, but I think, you know, I feel like there's a lot of reason for positivity, and, you know, and even like last night's game, you look and Jaren was +3. And so in the playoffs, you think, oh, we'll play him 7-8 more minutes. And we'll have Steven Adams. And I think those, you start to feel a little better about our chances, you know, because again, a 7-game series, you got to win them at home, and then all you got to do is win one on the road against the Nuggets, and everybody else, if we can hang on to the 2 seed, everybody else we play is going to be, they got to beat us once at home. So, you know, I think there's still good things. I think we're not where we need to be. I'd like to see us play better in the fourth quarter and stuff, but I think I still, you know, have very good optimism for the playoffs and for the rest of this season.
We completely buried the lead too, because folks, Conchar is back.
Yeah,
that'll be my final statement on this podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. We will be back with you next week then, and we will also be building out our plan for the playoffs as they are nearing, because we want to be talking with you as much as possible throughout that run. So yeah, thanks for joining us. For Kraft, I'm Will. We will talk to you next week then.